Going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside Segment. I'm Harold Fisher. Suicide remains a critical health issue in the United States. The number of incidents is on the rise. Now, statistics from the CDC say we saw a 30% increase between 1999 and 2016. But what is being done to prevent the numbers from going higher? Well, September is Suicide Prevention Month, and tonight we're addressing the issues behind this very difficult issue. My guests are Dr. Bridget Nemo. She's a psychologist with Howard University's Counseling Services. Takiyah Blackman is a mental health advocate and author of Saved and Depressed, A Suicide Survivor's Journey of Mental Health, Healing, and Faith. And psychiatrist Dr. Kevin Williams. Lines are open if you have a comment, if you have a question, if you need help regarding thoughts of suicide. Give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Thank you all for joining me. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
No problem.
Thank you.
I want to go to you, Dr. Williams, first. We heard those statistics from the CDC, but there are other statistics that suggest that even since 2017, that the suicide rates are higher. Why do you suppose that is? Is the reporting better, or are there really more incidents of suicide in the U.S.?
I think that the reporting is better, but I do think there is an increase in suicidality out in the universe now. I think that financially things are, were, and I guess still are, they're difficult. People primarily have financial concerns and then interpersonal, and it's just a hard time out there for people.
Dr. Williams, I need to have your line cleared up a little bit, but I promise I will come back to you. Our technical staff is going to look into why your phone is sounding the way it is. Same issue with you, Dr. Nemo. Your thoughts about not only the better reporting on suicide statistics, but also the incidence of this. Why do you suppose this is happening?
The increase?
Yes.
Well, here at the Counseling Service, we do a lot of outreach and letting the students know that we provide services. And I always say no problem is too big or small. And, you know, come talk to someone and make a safe space for people to share those thoughts and to validate them. And, you know, it's not right or wrong to think that way, but come and get some help. So more and more people are finding their voice and getting help.
Are you seeing more patients over the years? I mean, you know, you're not new to this. So you've been doing this for a while. Are you seeing an increase in caseload for yourself?
Oh, definitely at the Counseling Service and other Counseling Service in the surrounding areas. But, yes, we have a influx of students coming in because we're doing a lot of outreach to the students and faculty. But the numbers are coming in, men and women.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Takiyah, you... In your book, you talk about having thoughts of suicide from the age of 10 years old. Talk to me briefly about that, because I would imagine that thoughts of suicide are not necessarily unusual even for young people, but for you, this was a very, very specific situation.
Yeah, so I will say that I did not know that it was called suicide. I just knew as a child, I often thought about ways of ending my life and often wanting to die. So I had no concept of what suicide was, but those were the thoughts that I experienced. That, for me, it was rooted in childhood trauma. So watching my mom be verbally and physically abused, my dad being incarcerated, and I often, looking back and being in therapy for 4 years, I realized as a child, though oftentimes I would feel suicidal or feel very hopeless when I would see my mom being abused. And as I became older, I learned how to suppress the thoughts of suicide until one day I couldn't anymore and had an attempt.
Mm-hmm. What was that attempt like? What happened?
So about 8 months straight, I got my diagnosis of generalized anxiety disorder and major depressive disorder. And for 8 months after that, I constantly thought about suicide. At that time, I just recently got my master's, and I felt extremely low. I often had days where I would not eat. I would go 3 days without eating. I was not taking care of my hygiene. I would go for 7-8 days without taking a shower or anything, being dehydrated. And I became really crippled, and I was bedridden for a long time. And when I was suicidal, it was like I was constantly having to talk myself out of ending my life. And it became so exhausting to have to talk myself out of something that I felt the need to do, to really try to stop the mental and emotional anguish I was feeling. And then one day I could no longer fight with myself. I said it'll be easier if I gave into the thoughts. And so I did. I texted a friend and I told her that it will be better if I wasn't here. And that particular friend, I didn't know she did at the time, contacted the police, and they broke into my window, and I was forced into the psychiatric unit to get help.
How old were you when this was happening?
I was 24 mm-hmm. or 25 when this happened.
Mm-hmm. And how old are you now?
I'm 29.
You're 29. Is this based on what she's sharing with us, Dr. Nemo? Is this an unusual story?
No, it's not unusual at all. A lot of times when the students come to the counseling service, they've been suffering in silence for years. And either a friend or a faculty, or they just really want help. They don't want to take their life by suicide. They want help, and they want someone to listen to them and, you know, validate, you know, active listening, and not, oh, it's wrong, or you're going to go, you know, to hell if you take your own life. You know, it's, you make a safe place for people to share. And a lot of times the students come and don't even know, oh, this is trauma I'm experiencing. This is why I'm having these feelings. I don't want to live.
This is a discussion about some of the foundations, the mental health foundations of suicide on this Medical Monday. We are trying to figure out what can be done to address the rising rate of suicide. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. And as always, there will be resources on our website on whur.com after 8:30 in addition to the podcast. Let's go to Chris. Chris calling from Northeast. Chris, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
How you doing?
I'm doing fine.
Pearl Fisher, if I said your name correctly.
Yes.
First of all, sir, first and foremost, I want to say I listen to you almost every night, sir.
Well, thank
and
you.
It's like a tranquility when I don't listen to radio for a while and I hear the daily news that you come up with.
Mm-hmm.
I'm only 27 years old, man, and I'm going through my little cycles as well. You know, I can admit I had a little mental bipolar as far as I was diagnosed. So I had traumatic childhood events that took place in my life that kind of eat away at me. I'm a father of two boys. Just recently got kicked out of baby mom's crib. So now I'm out here basically on my own. And all that's just stressful for me and actually give me thoughts, negative thoughts, pessimistic thoughts almost 80% of the day, because I worry about my kids, my sons, and how I got to get my mental brain, my thoughts together and
mm-hmm.
collective. I recently read a book called Mindfulness from a library. I go to my local library in D.C., and I need to continue reading that book because I was starting to get, you know, a little touched by what the brain really is and how you could manage yourself and self-meditation. And I also want to chime that you called it Medical Monday. I like that term.
Well, thank you so much. Let me see what Dr. Williams has to say about this. Dr. Williams, Chris said quite a bit. What advice would you give him as he's obviously aware of some of the difficulties that he's trying to deal with? And maybe it appears that he's on the right path, but what else would you suggest for him?
Yeah, I would say absolutely make use of the many benefits that the D.C. health plans have. So make sure that you're covered. There are D.C. clinics that you can go to that cover mental illness equally to all physical illnesses. I worked at one, Paving the Way, on the southeast side of D.C. And absolutely, just the fact that you are aware of it and that you're trying to do something about it is key, because a lot of people just try to suppress it, as Kia was saying earlier. Also, with depression, you'll know that you're in a dangerous area when you start having physical symptoms, some behavior signs, and some belief changes. So the physical symptoms, I think Kia mentioned some of them, you can have increased or decreased sleep, so not sleeping at all or wanting to sleep all day. You can have increased or decreased eating. Like, some people don't want to eat. They don't feel like they can eat anything. Other people want to eat their feelings and just suppress it by eating. You can also have behavioral changes, for example, withdrawal, like not wanting to be involved with anything or anyone that used to bring you happiness. And the belief changes is hopelessness, helplessness. You don't see any way out. You just are totally overwhelmed with whatever it is that you're going through.
Okay.
If you start having those, please come for help.
And speaking of help, Chris, before I let you go, I wanted to share with our listeners at least one resource, the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. There is a 1-800 number. It's 800-273-TALK. That's 800-273-8255. It's available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, if you are having any of these feelings regarding taking your own life. But Chris, thank you so much, and continue to be mindful and seeking a more healthy mental state. I really appreciate you sharing with us. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Takiyah, after you were taken into psychiatric care, what happened?
So when I got to the emergency room, I was evaluated. And I did not know what day it was. I slowly realized that I was kind of fading away. And the psychiatrist said, you have two options. You can involuntary check yourself in, or, well, we will check you in, which would be involuntary, or you can check yourself in. And if you decide not to, you will not have much control over the process. So I did agree. And when I went up to the unit, I got a social worker. I saw a psychiatrist, and they started asking me, you know, did I have thoughts about ending my life and what I did, asking for the specifics. And I was prescribed medication to help with the depression as well as the anxiety. And I also had to participate in group therapy settings to really just talk about the things that was going on. And it was a difficult experience in the sense that there was a part of me that felt like my freedom was taking away. Mm-hmm. And I remember telling one of the ladies at the hospital, I said, I don't belong here. And she said, what do you mean? I said, I have a bachelor's from Howard and a master's from Georgetown. So people like me don't come here. So in my mind, I thought I was too educated, because a lot of times we associate people who suffer from mental illness to the person walking down the street talking to themselves. Maybe they're dealing with delusions or hallucinations. And while that is a portion or a population of people, there are also people who are walking around who we seem functional. And she told me, she said, your brain is an organ just like your heart. If you don't take care of your heart, you see the cardiologist, and if you're having issues with it. If you don't take care of your brain, you end up in a place like this. And that's when I started to realize I actually did need to be in the psychiatric unit, because it kept me safe from attempting again, and also start to understand what was going on.
I want to drill down a little bit more on that after the break, because you made some really critical points, and I want to make sure that I have Dr. Nemo and Dr. Williams also chime in. We have guests on the line, Sam and Charlie. We will be talking to you next at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Also, if you need assistance, the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline is 1-800-273-TALK. That's 1-800-273-TALK. That's 8255. A lot of numbers there, but we always will make sure that those resources are posted on our website on WHUR.com after 8:30 tonight. Please stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. This conversation continues on Sirius XM Channel 141 in just a few seconds.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU, and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. This is our Medical Monday conversation. September is Suicide Prevention Month, and we are addressing the issues behind this difficult and delicate issue. My guests are Dr. Bridget Nemo, psychologist with Howard University's Counseling Services, Takiyah Blackman, mental health advocate and author of Saved and Depressed, A Suicide Survivor's Journey of Mental Health, Healing, and Faith, and psychiatrist Dr. Kevin Williams. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. If you're having difficulty getting through, please keep trying. I promise we will get to you. Let us go to Sam. Sam calling on the line. Sam, what's on your mind?
Hello. I'm the founder of TextForHelp.org.
What's that now?
Samuel Williams II.
You said founder of
TextForHelp.org.
TextForHelp.org. Okay, go ahead.
And I'm actually sitting here with the president as well, Vanessa Williams Drew. And I'm also a black man who's had some suffering issues because, yes, we all go through, as you know. However, I had a victory and had my community show up to help me out as I was going through those struggles. And unfortunately, I couldn't let the problem continue, so we had to come up with a solution. And the great part about it is the person that helped me was my mother, the only person in the world that showed up to help me. And unfortunately, there's many young men and women out there that do not have a mother or a father to turn to. And a week and a half ago, one of my good friends hung himself in West Virginia. And so I had to get on the phone. I had to say something today because I come from Gary, Indiana, Indianapolis, Indiana area. And while I was there, I was beat by the police and no one helped me. And I turned to my community, the church, everyone, and they just decided to call me crazy, insane. But somehow, on the same day as the marathon bomb, my mom was traveling from Texas across country.
Sam, I have to stop you here. I've got a lot of people on the line, and I've got to get to as many people as possible that I could help. Please make a quick point.
Let me make the quick point here. If you do not have family, you do not have an option, okay? And so we've got to do something right now today, because my heart's hurting too right now to hear some of these people out here, the way they're going through. So don't give up. There are people that care about you. I've put all of my resources, my personal resources, grants, everything behind what we're doing to try to come up with solutions. So do not give up. People care about you guys. Okay, so I love you, and I just want that to be known. Okay, let the world know that people love you, and that's going to save you. Okay, so I mean, I got so much more to say. Yeah. If you guys need anything, reach out to me. I'm here to just give everything I can to you guys. So
well, thank you so much, Sam, with Text for Help. That's text the number 4 help. Thank you so much. I appreciate you sharing with us. I want to go back to Dr. Williams, because one of the things that I found interesting that Takiya was saying was the impression that only a certain class of people have mental health issues, that struggle with suicide attempts. Can you briefly talk to me a little bit about what she was sharing with us?
Yes, I think that she absolutely hits on something that's really important. So the example that I use is a different analogy. She used a cardiac analogy. I'm using a bone analogy. So our brain is like other organs. And the only difficulty is that we are trying to use the thing that is not working to see if there's a problem. So if we had a broken bone, if we were running across a football field and 100 people running across and 4 or 5 of them stepped in a gopher hole and fractured their femur, you would know it. You wouldn't debate it. People would not ask the doctor, you know, if they were going to be in the cast forever. Very few people would go untreated because you know you would limp through the rest of your life. Psychiatric medication, psychiatric treatment is just asked. It's just like an ACE bandage. It's just like a air cast. So therapy with therapy.
Oops, I think we may have lost Dr. Williams. I'd like to have Dr. Nemo kind of pick up from there. Your thoughts about what Takiya was saying, in that this is, it seems to me that this medical issue was a physiological condition of the brain. Is that correct?
Yeah. So my diagnosis is major depressive disorder and generalized anxiety disorder.
Okay. Dr. Nemo.
Yes. I want to say something about the point she made about she wasn't supposed to be here, she's educated. And that's how a lot of people feel. They suffer in silence and they won't say anything. So it takes a lot of courage to get help, or for someone to force you to get help. But, you know, it's still a lot of, even though we do a lot of outreach, it's still a lot of stigmatism and shame around depression, anxiety, and especially having suicidal ideations. You know, people will just keep it to themselves because they don't want to look, quote unquote, crazy.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Charlie, calling from Potomac. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Great conversation. Just wanted to echo what Chris, the 27-year-old father, commented about, you know, recently separating, not being around his sons, and also the doctors have been saying about the physiological aspect of it. I'm a white male, basically had a very charmed life, knew other people who had gone through divorce, lost their kids, know two prominent men in Washington, D.C., whose fathers, by the way, had passed as well, who went through a divorce and took their own lives. And I would just, my only comment would be to be very careful of watching morning talk shows as a man when you're going through a divorce and loss of your children in a custody battle, because, you know, there's a lot of those shows that are market driven. And it hit me one day that a man leaves his wife, he's called a deserter. A woman leaves her husband and she's put on today's show like Lindsey Vonn and celebrated for being a liberator. And what happens is the man gets so depressed and feels so isolated that life's not fair, that substance abuse will kick in, and that's exactly what the mother wants, or she can say you're a bad person. And it really, you can get caught in this vicious circle, and I'll just finish with this, that staying close to your family is without a doubt the most important thing, and definitely helped me through that tough time. Thank you for the call.
Interesting, Charlie. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. And to your point, it's funny that, you know, or interesting, I should say, that he mentioned, you know, for example, morning talk shows. Almost all morning talk shows and even morning news after 8 a.m., the focus groups focus on women, not men, because after 8 a.m., more women are still at home, even if they are working women, working in the home or stay-at-home moms. There are more of them at home, and so he makes a really interesting point. One of the other things Dr. Nemo, that I found really, really curious, and this may be help me and others to understand. And you know, when I was in college, there was no discussion about youth and mental health. It just did not happen as it relates to any of the challenges or struggles that were happening. And even when you talk about bullying, for example, back when I was a kid, while it happened, there was no discussion that I know of as a child of the impact of bullying on mental health. And now there's a lot of discussion. What happened?
Well, when I went to school, too, it wasn't available. We didn't have a counseling service like Howard and GW and all the counseling service have here. But, you know, the stigmatism, you know, more outreach, you know, getting it out there, you know, mental illness is real. Depression is real. You know, come talk to us. And now it has increased and, you know, services provide individual, group, and a lot of outreach services. But people start getting out there and making a voice for themselves and educating people about mental illness to break down the stigma. But still in different religions and cultures, you know, it's still, you know, it doesn't exist, mental illness or depression or suicide. You know, people might say, just pray about it. And okay, but you need more than just prayer.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Williams, have we begun to look at these issues, particularly as it relates to young people, whether it's bullying, dealing with stress, differently in how they adjust to these things? Dr. Williams? Yeah, I think we may have lost him, and that's unfortunate. Go ahead.
Well, I want to say also in present day, the kids have more to get involved. You know, social media. We didn't have all of that, you know, growing up. So it's more things, more issues and challenges kids are stimulated by that impact their mental health and their wellness.
After you had that conversation, Takiya, with the psychiatrist about admitting yourself into care, what was the process? What was it that you began to understand about yourself and what was happening to you?
So I started to understand generational trauma. Mm-hmm. So things being passed down from generation to generation. I started to become self-aware through this experience, through therapy, as well as taking medication. And the biggest thing that I would say I would contribute to my healing process has definitely been therapy. I also participated with the National Alliance on Mental Illness, and I started joining, utilizing their free support groups. And that helped me because I was around a community of individuals who lived with the diagnosis, people who were hospitalized that I could relate to. So that did make me feel like I wasn't alone. When I was discharged from the hospital, I moved on to the partial hospitalization program. And it was intense therapy where I would spend 6 to 7 hours a day for almost a month in group therapy and individual therapy, having my medication monitored. And that's when I started to notice a bit of a difference, because now I was able to identify what are the people or the places or things that actually contribute or that trigger my anxiety or trigger my suicide ideations. And it was a space where I just became more self-aware.
Mm. You said something that struck me. When you were released, if you can tell me, how did your doctors know, and how did you know that you were safe for release, where the risk of attempting suicide was low enough?
So there were things that I had to do. So they asked me, would you participate in this partial hospitalization program? Because at first I said no, and they told me I could not leave. But then since I really wanted to leave, I said, well, I'll give it a try. I was released. My family also came down, as well as them contacting my therapist, because I did have a therapist at the time. And they scheduled my appointment with my therapist and also released me to family members and friends. Because at that particular time, I was living by myself. I was not working. The depression became that debilitating where I did not work for almost 2 years. They gave me the okay to leave just because I would be surrounded by family members and friends, and I also was involved in the partial hospitalization program.
Interesting. So, and you were also on medication?
Yes.
You were also, did it help?
Absolutely. And so, in a complete transparent moment, I was weaned off my medication and started the process in March of this year. In July, I was completely weaned off. And about 6 weeks in, so about to the beginning of September, I noticed a decline, and my suicidal thoughts came back in about 2 weeks ago, actually. And it was my therapist who explained to me that the chemical that's associated with our mood, that's commonly associated with our mood, is serotonin. And while, yes, working out does help because it increases my endorphins, but there may be some instances where some people's brain not may produce as much serotonin, so they need the medication to help them balance out. I don't have anything that's going on wrong in my life. Everything is going well, and there's nothing that's contributing to my depression, but it is a chemical imbalance in the brain, and a lot of times people automatically assume that if everything is going right in your life, you have no reason to be depressed when there is science behind it. And I know the therapist will back me up.
Yeah, that's the thing that I was interested in, because when you talk about something that is physiological, where there is a chemical imbalance, that chemical imbalance is, while it may have to do with mental health, that is just like, and maybe this is a poor, analogy, but this is, if you are a diabetic and your, mm-hmm. and your body yes. isn't producing insulin,
yep.
then you have to take medication in order to correct that issue. And this is the same kind of thing.
And I will say that I did just recently have to go back on my medication for that reason as of last week, because if not, I'm pretty sure that I would have probably had another attempt. And so the medication does help to level out everything. And so I will say that medication has helped me.
Yes, yes. Medication does help for people. But the thing is, a lot of people will go to their primary care first and not the psychiatrist, who is the expert in the medication. And like I tell my clients, it's trial and error, It's not like McDonald's. You go and put in an order and you get your meal at the next window. You have to give medication a try. What might work for one person might not work for another. So people tend to get discouraged with medication. They want a quick fix, and it doesn't work like that.
But if you don't realize that you may have a mental health issue, most people would go to their primary care person, the physician, and say, I don't feel well, or I've been feeling low and I have the blues or what have you, before going to see a psychologist
or a psychiatrist. Yes, that's true. So what we try to do is educate people, okay, and a lot of physicians are now, encouraging their clients, their patients, to go see a psychologist or go see a psychiatrist and not prescribe the medication. Mm-hmm. So, working together.
When you are on your medication, is this another analogy here? Is this like a headache where you take a pill because your head hurts? Or is this something that when that head hurts, i.e. you have thoughts of suicide, you take it for a week or 2 weeks or a month? How does that work?
So I have been on my medication. Like I said, I was off of it as of July. But before that, I was on it for 3.5 years. And I just went back on it last week. So it is my hope and desire that I don't have to have it for the rest of my life. But the truth of the matter is, if I should have to be, it's something that I had to learn to accept, because when I'm not on it, it's not only the suicide ideation. It's also the isolation where I'm not talking to people for weeks at a time. It's also me not taking care of my hygiene. It's me being in the bed for days at a time. And so the truth of the matter is that studies show that people who have a suicide attempt are more likely to attempt again. And I'm very open and honest with my friends and my family, and I will let them know when the suicidal thoughts, if I have those thoughts, and text my therapist. And so for me, the medication, while it's only been a couple days and I'm not at my peak, because it takes about 4 to 6 weeks just for me to actually start to feel at my best. And so it's not only, like I said, just, yes, I do get a headache, but it's not eating, and it's the part where I like to explain it as really feeling paralyzed and crippled. And sometimes people say just snap out of it or just get over it, when they don't realize how physically debilitating it can be.
Mm-hmm. About therapy for these kinds of situations, is that something that is also recommended in addition to the
medication? Yes, it's highly recommended, because you see, she is aware of her red flags, her warning signs, and her triggers. So she knew, okay, something is going on. She has insight, you know, working with her therapist. Hey, I need some help. I might need to get back on medication. And in therapy, you know, individual or group psychotherapy, it's a safe space where you can, you know, leave the shame and talk about all the feelings you have, the dark feelings and emotions, and not be judged.
So help me understand this, because I think a lot of people who are listening would probably think, if this is a physiological thing that can be treated with medication, why would you need therapy if the pills work?
So I want to add to that.
Yeah.
And I know the therapist will back me up. So medication helps deal with the symptoms that you're experiencing, the loss of interest, not being able to get out of bed. But therapy actually helps to get to the root. What is depression rooted in? What is the anxiety rooted in? It helps you to develop healthy coping skills, how to identify your triggers, how to have healthy relationships. Because when someone is battling with a mental health condition, it does impact their relationships. And so overall, therapy just helped me to become extremely self-aware. And so that I can effectively manage my depression and my anxiety, because I can take the medication all day long, but if I don't have the healthy coping skills, it's not able to give me a well-rounded medical or mental health care that I need.
I saw where you had done some speaking back in July, and I wonder, how do you cope with speaking in front of large crowds? And that may have nothing to do with your anxiety. It could be something else. But is that, in addition to writing the book, is that therapeutic?
Yes. Telling my story is actually very therapeutic. It's very healing. It's my anxiety. That would be probably more of social anxiety. Mm-hmm. It's not fear of public speaking.
But what would be the difference?
So if you can explain generalized anxiety and social anxiety.
we're putting the doctor on the spot, but yet we're meeting, what, going to a party, you may have social anxiety.
Yeah, so but, someone would be, they may have, you know, have anxiety as far as interacting with people. For me, it's a matter of when I watched, when generalized anxiety is being worried or having constant worry, even than the more than a situation may warrant about everything. It could be school, it could be finances, it could be work, it could be relationship. It's a constant state of worry. So for me, I like to explain it as I felt like I was in the middle of the ocean, constantly in a panic state, flapping my arms up and down and saying help, but I actually never drowned. And so that's what anxiety felt like to me.
For you.
Mm-hmm.
Do you wanted to share something, though?
No.
Well, and I think that is the complicated issue, because you do have not only the root of where this came from when you were, you know, a little girl. But then you have some people who seem to handle these things well and may never have any suicidal ideations. But again, is that a physiological thing? Or is that mental? And what is the best way to address, not only this for individuals, but I think more holistically as we try to look at how we can reduce these large-scale numbers of people who are committing suicide? How do we address that?
Oh, I have to mention this. I vow to myself that I think it's important that we consider consider changing the language around suicide. So we say die by suicide, and the reason we want to change it from commit suicide, because it places, commit suicide places the blame on the individual opposed to the mental illness that influenced that behavior. So we wouldn't say like someone who had diabetes, they committed to their death, or the person who accidentally fell asleep at the wheel, that they committed to their death. And so that's why they are doing things in like articles and even on the media, they're trying to change it to die by suicide. So it doesn't place blame on the individual.
That would be confusing. And let me be clear, because I've had that conversation before. Mm-hmm. I think that that has a tendency to sugarcoat these things, and this is a really, really serious thing. And I think that when we begin to change the language, and we begin to, this is my opinion, okay, that when we begin to change the language, and we begin to sugarcoat these things, the reality is that people are dying. And it continues to happen. Mm-hmm. And I think that as it relates to people like you who have been so outspoken, we need more people like you to be more outspoken to help reduce the stigma of it. But these things still happen. And I'm always concerned about this being confusing to the general populace, because we do not want to accept that this is not an issue that cannot be addressed. That it needs to be addressed, and to look at it from a very, very serious point of view. It is what it is. But in that particular regard, whether it is physiological, whether we need more therapists, we need more culturally aware therapists, yeah, and the like. To settle into discussions about the semantics, I think it does a disservice. But that's, like I said, that's my own opinion. I really think that we need to address the really difficult and painful issues regarding suicide so that people can get the help that, you know, that they need, and not to make this something that is digestible.
Right. I think for me, it's just understanding that people who are struggling with their mental health, especially those who have a diagnosis, we're sick. Whether it's mentally ill or sick, mm-hmm, in the brain, however you want to refer to it. And so for me, it's just the reason why I express it is because I never want someone to feel like because they were in a state where they attempted to end their life, where it was their fault. Is that they were not mentally healthy and they were sick. So I remember, you know, people would say things to me like, you're going to go to hell, or why are you being selfish, when I was not in my right state of mind. So I just don't want, I know how that feels to place blame when I was not well.
Yeah. And I would argue that, yes, that it is definitely an illness, and you should be no more to blame than someone who has breast cancer. Or someone who has leukemia, or someone who has juvenile diabetes, for example. And so I would think that you are absolutely correct that this needs to be addressed head on, whether it be through medication, whether it be through therapy, or both, or even as your book says, a healthy dose of prayer as, mm-hmm, well. I'll let you have a final word, Doc.
I also wanted to say that conversations like these, changing the conversation, you know, people don't want to talk about depression, and mental illness and suicide, but you have to talk about it, you know, and make it a safe place to talk about it so people can share, so we can decrease these incidents that continue to happen with younger adults and the elderly.
And your work, here at Howard University and your peers as well, will go a long way into helping that. So I want to thank both of you for coming in and sharing this really important issue with us, Takiyah Blackmon, as well as Dr. Bridget Nemo, and also Dr. Kevin Williams. We lost Dr. Williams earlier because he was a great contributor to this conversation as well, but I want to thank you both for coming in. That is The Daily Drum on Sirius XM, Channel 141, for this Monday, September 30th. I'm Harold Fisher. Now, stay tuned for The Connection. Good night.